With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gaia misses. Real Madrid are into the final. Pedri to win it for Barcelona if he can put this in. He does, and we have a Clásico final of the Spanish Super Cup coming up on Sunday. Barcelona win the shootout 4-2, and just like Real Madrid last night, they were nerveless when it came to the penalties.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this La Liga Lowdown podcast. I'm your host Matt Clark, delighted to be joined by Tom Harris. How are you, Tom?
Really good, thank you, Matt. We've had a really entertaining game tonight. Really looking forward to chatting about it with you.
Indeed, we've had the Supercopa semi-finals, and as Luis Rubiales would have liked to have designed, it is a Clásico final, Real Madrid against Barca in the Saudi sunset on Sunday. So we'll talk about that, of course. But first of all, let's kick off with that Barcelona semi-final. They beat Betis on penalties. Marc-André Ter Stegen, the hero in the shootout, saving two of the Betis pens. But it was an entertaining game before that. Two apiece, 1-1 after 90 minutes and 2-2 after extra time. Betis coming from behind twice. Really exciting in some parts of the game. Second half, not quite so good, but we'll talk about all that in a second. What were your overall impressions, Tom?
Yeah, really exciting game. Like you said, I was impressed with Real Betis and the resilience they showed to get back into the game. I thought Barcelona started really well in that first half. I thought, you know, it looked really good and they were really fluid in that midfield, and the likes of Dembele and Rafinha, providing the width, they looked really, really good. But you can't write this Real Betis side off, and they'll be devastated to go home, without being in this final. But I think that stands them in good stead for the rest of the season, because they've shown that they can mix it up with one of the two best sides in La Liga.
Yeah, it was a pretty strong side Xavi put out, and it also featured the two centre backs that Barca fans have been crying out to see together, Jules Koundé and Ronald Araujo. Despite some rumours that he had a bit of discomfort before the game, he started. He came through it, looked to be absolutely fine. But again, they couldn't keep a clean sheet. It's a really strange comparison, Barca. They've conceded many goals in competitions which aren't the league, but of course they're so solid in the league. Here is that exact stat. They've received 23 goals in 24 games this season. Of course, only 6 in 16 league matches, but 17 in only 8 games that aren't in the league. So that's Champions League, Supercopa and Copa. Of course, Bayern hit them for quite a few in the Champions League, and Inter City last week in the Copa too. So can you explain why they seem to be so solid in La Liga, but not in the other competitions?
Not really, to be honest. It is a weird one. I mean, I think the only thing you probably say is a kind of a chaos of cup football. And, with the league, you're playing these teams every week and you get into a bit of a rhythm, and then the cup comes along and into City, for example, with a completely changed squad and flying all the way out to Saudi Arabia for this game, today. It's perhaps it's that kind of lack of rhythm and lack of being able to put, a decent run of games together. But it's very strange. And, I thought Ter Stegen played very well today. I thought, today in particular, they were unlucky to concede two, because the first goal, I think Luis Enrique got a bit fortunate with his assist. And the second goal, it was a stunning finish from Lorena Moron, a back heel nutmeg. So sometimes you can't account for those things. But yeah, very, very strange. And from Xavi's perspective, he'll be hoping that kind of leaky, goal conceding form doesn't, start to crop up in La Liga.
Absolutely right. And yeah, you're right to mention those two players there. Luis Enrique, of course, scored a fantastic goal against Rayo at the weekend in La Liga. He was electric tonight, set up both goals. And the second goal in particular was a magnificent play. He kind of plays a 1-2 on the edge of the box. It gets looped over the top. He controls it well, crosses for Loren Moron. And this guy, he hasn't played since August, but he was there at the right moment to get Betis back in this. And this came after Ansu Fati's spectacular goal, which was worthy of winning any game. But of course, yeah, Loren Moron showed that fighting spirit from Betis, as you mentioned, getting them back into the tie. But onto the penalties itself then. Yeah, Barca were pretty solid. I'm not quite sure about Franchesi's technique, but they were generally very good pens. And as for Betis, well, Ter Stegen guessed right on a couple of them and made some solid saves, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think we do have to talk about Ter Stegen. You know, if we're talking not just about this game, but Barcelona's form in general. I mean, looking at last season, he underperformed his post-shot expected goals. So that's the amount of goals that are expected to go in based on the quality of his shots against him by 3.9. So that's almost four goals he let in, which he perhaps shouldn't have according to the statistics. This season, he's overperforming that by 3.1. So that's a difference of seven goals. And you can see the confidence with him as well. He's really good with his distribution again tonight. I think it was 5 out of 7 long balls completed, 2 saves in that penalty shootout. And as we've said, you know, that defensive form in La Liga is mainly down to him.
Indeed. His form has taken a comeback rather like his hairline, I'd suggest. On to the semi-final that took place on Wednesday evening. And that was, of course, league champions Real Madrid against cup finalists Valencia. Another similar kind of image to the game, really. The favourites, Real Madrid, started well, scored in the first half through Karim Benzema's penalty. But then second half, it was very flat. They didn't really seem to be getting the right rhythm. And then Valencia hit back straight away in the second half. Fantastic from Samuel Lino. What were your thoughts on that game and kind of the comparisons, really, in the performances between Barca and Real?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that both sides weren't massively convincing. They both had their spells, as we've mentioned before. Barcelona in the first 30 minutes, I thought, were really good. And then they struggled a little bit in the second half and in the second half of extra time. Similar with Real Madrid. You know, I think that it was a bit of a lapse of... Well, it was a fantastic ball in from Toni Lato for the equaliser. But also, it's just a few lapses of concentration. And we were talking about that defence for Barcelona, but if we're looking at Real Madrid, Thibaut Courtois was the man overperforming that statistic before that post-shot expected goals. He's now underperforming it this season. So it's kind of switched around completely. And, you know, Ancelotti's talked a lot in the past about pessimistic defenders and optimistic defenders. And one of those players that he labelled a pessimistic defender, so defenders who are very focused and really committed to make sure that nothing goes wrong and overly cautious, is Nacho. And Nacho came back in for this game and he was playing unfamiliar position at left back and he was absolutely brilliant. 2 blocks, 5 interceptions, 3 tackles. And, you know, if you're looking at Antonio Rudiger and Eder Militao, perhaps Nacho is the man to come in and shore up that defence a little bit, because, like we said, he's a very, very committed defender and perhaps he's that kind of steel that they need in the middle of that defence.
Expecting the worst at all times and accommodating for that. It's that old cliche though, isn't it? Forwards win you matches, but defenders and goalkeepers win you titles and championships. And perhaps that could be the deciding factor in the league this season. We'll obviously have to see how that pans out. But again, a word on Valencia. I'd suggest that despite the fact Real Madrid won the game on penalties, I'd argue that Valencia probably come out of this game with more credit, don't they? Because they really performed, especially second half. And the youngsters were really impressive. Almeida, Fran Perez came on and looked really assured. What did you make of their performance overall?
Yeah, like you said, the best thing about this Valencia team, I think, are the young players. They have so many of them who are so exciting. I mean, Yunus Musa had a fantastic World Cup and, you know, he wasn't brilliant yesterday, but there's youth and there's energy in that midfield. Samuel Lino, I think he's taken the second most shots in La Liga, so a very, very positive player, and he was rewarded with a goal. Yeah, I think Georgi Mamardashvili as well in goal was absolutely sensational as well. I think you've got to give credit to Valencia, especially, you know, for the way they've managed to replace Gonzalo Guedes, Carlos Soler. And, you know, they weren't expected to win this game, but, you know, they have come out of it with a bit of hope for the rest of the season. They can keep on winning games and maybe sneak into that European conversation. But, you know, if they finish mid-table with a couple of years that they've had, I think they'll be happy.
Potentially, yes. I just thinking of those, you know, the emotions of the game. And poor old Chaumet, he pays the penalty twice, doesn't he? He gives away the penalty with a bit of a rash challenge on Benzema in the first half. And then he balloons his penalty over the bar in the shootout, taking second, which was a bit of a surprise. And then, of course, poor old Jose Gaya, he's the tears in the cup final last season in Seville. And then he's injured and has to leave the World Cup squad just on the cusp of it beginning. And then, of course, in the Supercoppa here, captain of the side, he takes the fifth penalty to keep them in the game. And it's a poor penalty and he sees it saved. And yeah, you just really feel for the guy. And as Paco tweeted last night, though, it's not about the result per se, as you said as well. It's more about the fact they gave everything and really performed for the shirt and the badge. And I think that's the kind of bare minimum that fans want to see. And I think Valencia fans will come away with some kind of pride, as you mentioned there. So that sets it up beautifully for Sunday, the final, another Clásico in the Supercopa, the most played fixture in the competition's history. It'll be the 16th separate game between those two sides, and it'll be the 9th edition in which it has been played. Real Madrid have an overwhelming dominance over Barca in the Supercopa, and if they win this final, they will equal Barca's 13 titles in the tournament. So very much on for Real Madrid to try and get that title. Barca, of course, will want to avenge their earlier season Clásico defeat in which they conceded half of all of their season's league goals against Real Madrid. Tom, what do you expect from that game?
Well, it's going to be exciting, that's for sure. I mean, these two sides, there's no love lost between them, as we all know, and they've got some really, you know, exciting dribblers on both teams. I think Rafinha, Dembele, Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo now back and playing kind of well on the wings. So going to be a lot of one-on-one battles in wide areas, which I think is going to be exciting. Fede Valverde, obviously Karim Benzema, Lewandowski are back and playing. You know, all the players are there. You know, there's no suspensions really to worry about. There don't seem to be too many injury issues. And I think it'll be all guns blazing. I mean, but, you know, at the same time, I think, you know, Real Madrid in particular might have to be a little bit careful, because if we're looking at their schedule, you know, obviously they've flown all the way out to Saudi Arabia to take part in this tournament. They had 120 minutes against Valencia. They've got potentially 120 minutes against Barcelona, at least 90. Then they've got to fly back. They've got Villarreal away. They've got Athletic Club away. And then they've got Real Sociedad, all in the space of 10 or so days. So it's going to be very, very intense for Real Madrid. And, you know, the way this season is, with such, you know, fine margins between the two sides, any slip-ups and any kind of tiredness could be punished. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see this as a spectacle, but then also fascinating to see how both sides react from having to have played in it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, many people criticise the Supercopa. That's an entirely fair assessment. Sam Leveridge wrote a piece on our Substack, llonline.substack.com, about the deal signed, which took the tournament to Saudi Arabia. So check that one out on our Substack. Fresh content every day. But yeah, we're looking forward to this game. It's, as you say, it's always one to watch between Barca and Real Madrid. Just before we hit the break, though, we will talk about a player that's left La Liga, João Félix. He made his debut in the Premier League on Thursday night, Fulham against Chelsea. We'll talk about the move in general in part two when we discuss Atleti's game against Almeria. But we actually recorded that before João made his debut, if that makes sense. So it's our past, but your future, listeners. But yeah, on this debut, João, he looked impressive in the early stages, but then was sent off before the hour mark with a two-footed challenge on a Fulham player. So really not the ideal start, Tom, because that's a three-game ban straight away.
Well, it's incredible how much this loan deal costs to get over the line, how many games he's going to play for that money, and now he's missing three of them. That's actually quite a significant chunk of what Chelsea have paid for. But yeah, like you said, he did play well from what I saw. I mean, four shots on target, six shots overall, so very positive. I saw a nice little dribble out wide where he nutmegged the fullback and set up a chance for Kai Havertz. He's an exciting player, and you know, even if Chelsea, you know, there's been a lot of talk about João not being able to perform without a number nine. Even if Chelsea don't get that number nine in this January transfer window, I know they've been linked to Marcus Thuram, for example. I think tonight showed that he can still play and it'll still be really, really exciting in the Premier League. That red card, you know, he has got that bit of a streak in him. A lot of players who have played for Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid do, but he does need to rein that in a little bit if he's going to succeed in England. But the way he played before that, yeah, really exciting.
Mm. Vamos a ver, as I say. Curiously, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang did not get off the bench for Chelsea in this game. So we'll see if he returns to La Liga in some capacity too. Bit of a merry-go-round with Memphis, linked with Atleti as well. So all of that, plenty of rumours and things like that. We'll also have a Friday roundup on our Substack of all the transfers. That'll be a piece scheduled every Friday in the month of January. So check that out for all the latest ins and outs from La Liga. Well, that'll do for part one. But in part two, there's plenty more to come because we're talking about the weekend in La Liga. And there's some massive games, including the Basque Derby and some huge games at the bottom. So stay tuned.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to this La Liga Lowdown podcast. I'm back here with Tom Harris, and now we're going to look ahead to the weekend's fixtures in La Liga. Match day 17. Tom, there's some fascinating games coming up. There's only eight, of course, because of the Supercopa final on Sunday. But the headline is without doubt the Basque Derby, isn't it?
Yeah, what a game this has potential to be. I mean, La Real are in unbelievable form at the moment. They were excellent away at Almeria last weekend. They nullified Almeria, who actually have one of the better home records in La Liga. Don't think Almeria had a shot in the first half, so it just shows how defensively solid and organised they are. Bryce Mendes will be back for this game as well after his short suspension, so that's a massive boost. He's been absolutely incredible for Real Sociedad. And Athletic Club, you know, they were probably leave a bit frustrated after that result against Osasuna. They dominated the play, but just couldn't convert that into many big chances. And yeah, obviously looking at where these two teams are in the table, add that to the rivalry, I think we're in for a really feisty encounter.
Yes, third against seventh in the table. Of course, Athletic missed the opportunity to go into the top four on Monday night. So there is 6 points between them. And as you say, Athletic have now had two nil-nils in a row coming into this one. And they haven't won away at Anoeta since March 2017. Now, that might sound like a long time, but Iñaki Williams was already a year into his remarkable consecutive streak by then. And this game will be his 250th consecutive match.
Wow. Statman match strikes again, obviously. That's incredible. Yeah, really looking forward to seeing him and Nico play together again. They thought, again, they were really, really exciting. And Ike Muniain as well, we've got to mention him. He came off the bench against Osasuna and he looked really, really bright. And Muniain is actually underperforming quite a lot of his numbers this season. So I think he's underperforming his expected goals output by about two, his expected assists by about one as well. So once it all clicks for him, you know, he created a great chance against Osasuna and Nico Williams put it wide. Once it all starts to click for him, I think Athletic Club are going to start, you know, climbing up the table again and scoring these goals.
Yeah, it seems to me that compared to, say, last season with Marcelino, that Muniain doesn't quite have the same protagonism in the team. Do you think that's fair or do you think it is just a case of it isn't quite clicking?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think when you look at this Athletic Club team now, there are more attacking players who are getting involved. I mean, Oyen Sanset, for example, is a very interesting case of kind of this hybrid, you know, defensive midfielder and then arriving late, his llegada into the area. And then Nico coming through as well. There are all more focal points in this Athletic Club attack now, I'd say. But yeah, you know, you can still see the quality when Ikemoniain gets on the ball, and you know, he's really, really dangerous. And I think he's probably their biggest hope against La Real, because as we said, they're dominating games. Bryce is fantastic. David Silva, you know, at 37 years of age, he became the oldest player to score on his birthday in La Liga last weekend, 37 years old. Really, really looking forward to this. And like you say, at Anoeta, the atmosphere is always fantastic on Derby Day.
Indeed. And that may or may not have been a question in our recent quiz, which you compiled for our Substack, llonline.substack.com. We've got fresh content every single day, including quizzes and profiles and previews. So check that out if you haven't already, and it's absolutely free to subscribe. Before we move on then, Tom, quick prediction for this game. La Real looking pretty strong, but Athletic. They did win the last fixture 4-0 back at San Mamés. So that kind of, Real Sociedad will want revenge for that one, but will they get it?
Yeah, don't want to overlook Athletic Club too much, because like we have been saying, they're probably due a couple of goals. So they were unlucky not to win against Osasuna 2-0 in a row. But I think at home at Anoeta, La Real will be too strong. I'm going to say 2-0 here.
I quite fancy a draw in this one, I have to say. So we'll see. We'll see which of us is closer to the outcome come Saturday night. But it's an absolute must watch. And that is definitely the headline of the match day. But there's plenty more besides. Speaking of which, Atleti, they travel to Almeria on Sunday, and they will be without João Félix, because just 3 days after he played against Barca, he's already gone. He's at Chelsea now, on loan until the end of the season, having extended his contract until 2027. What are your thoughts on it? Is it the right move?
I mean, I think for Atletico Madrid, I think they've done really well out of this, because, you know, a lot's been made over the last couple of seasons of this, you know, tense relationship between João and between Diego Simeone. And I think just to have that intense scrutiny relieved for the rest of the season, it is only going to be good news. You know, it's less pressure. You know, every time João Félix stepped on the pitch for Atletico Madrid, everybody was looking at how many minutes he was playing, where he was playing, how Diego Simeone was using him. And suddenly that's gone for the rest of the season. So I think that's, you know, really good news for Atletico Madrid, as good a player as João is. But also, they actually, you know, they're getting money for this. They're getting 11 million euros as a loan fee. They've signed him as a contract extension until 2027. So, you know, he could come back. And if he does come back, let's say hypothetically Diego Simeone isn't the Atletico Madrid manager anymore, he comes back to a fresh team, fresh ideas, and maybe he can become a bit more of a protagonist, you know, in his second stint. So I think it's all positive for Atleti. And, you know, as good a player as João is, they will miss his quality at times, but they won't miss that kind of intense, you know, focus on João and Diego Simeone throughout the rest of the season.
João, you're gone. I was saying in the group chat earlier that I had the Bass Hunter tune in my head all day after that news. So you can have that, listeners, a nice earworm for you. But yeah, as we say, I'm not sure Diego Simeone knows his love was strong. That's the other big news, though, isn't it? In terms of Atleti, I think it was El Chiringuito broke the news that, well, they believe Diego Simeone will not continue next season. Of course, we know it must take a pinch of salt for El Chiringuito, but that would be an absolutely seismic transition, wouldn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it really, really would. You know, you can't underestimate the, you know, the impact that Diego Simeone's had at Atletico Madrid. He's revolutionised the club, and they are synonymous with him now, the way they play. And, you know, it's their identity. Cholismo is Atletico Madrid, and it has been for the last 10 or so years. So it'll be a massive change, but there are some, you know, really exciting managers, you know, on the market at the moment. And someone like Luis Enrique at Atletico Madrid would be, you know, mouth-watering prospect. You know, there's plenty of things that could happen and plenty of directions that Atleti could take.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out in the next few weeks and months as the season continues. If you want more on that, our colleague Sam Leveridge was on Into the Calderon chatting with Jeremy Berrin about that and plenty more. So Atleti fans, do go and check that out for plenty of in-depth chat on all things João and Diego Simeone, of course, too. Back to La Liga action. Friday night, it all kicks off. Celta against Villarreal, really attractive looking game. Plenty of ballers, as the youngsters say, in this one. Some interesting news as well on Friday. Oscar Mendez from Relevo revealed that Hugo Mayo is seriously considering leaving the club in the summer. Another, you know, legend of the club. That would also be a pretty seismic shift for Celta. But in terms of this game on Friday night, Villarreal are looking very strong, aren't they, Tom? But Celta had their first win under Carvajal last week against Elche. Yeah, it should be an entertaining one on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, particularly of the Emery era, you know, this is exactly the kind of game that Villarreal would lose. You know, they'd beat Real Madrid, play fantastically well. Everyone would think they'd be on the top four charge, and then they'd drop points, you know. I mean, one that sticks out to me was Elche a couple of seasons ago. They were 2-0 at half-time, and they ended up drawing a game 2-2. That's the kind of thing Villarreal did. They seem to have turned the corner under Setién recently, and obviously, that result on the weekend was seismic, but... You know, it's early days. We'll have to see if he can continue with this good form. But yes, Celta, I they played really well last week, and I thought against Elche, Gabri Vega in particular was really, really good. I mean, he had 3 shots on target that game. If you look at the shots he's had since he's come back from the World Cup, that's 4, 3, 3, 5. So he's always very positive. He's getting into those areas, and I think he could cause Villarreal problems. There's also Strand Larsen as well. I really like their Danish forward up front, their Norwegian forward up front, sorry. He's actually La Liga's biggest XG underperformer officially now. He's still yet to score from 2.8 expected goals, but he has had 2 disallowed and he's hit the woodwork a few times. So I think a goal's coming for him as well. Lots of storylines to look out for. And yeah, Gerard Moreno back in this Villarreal side, he makes him a lot, lot stronger.
Any game which features Iago Aspas and Gerard Moreno, I'm going to watch it. And we recommend you do too. On to Saturday, Real Valladolid kick off against Rayo. Pacheta's side have lost their last 3 in the league. Very fine margins. It was that last minute winner from Abdon Prats with Mallorca the other day. So they'll be looking to bounce back. Of course, Rayo lost to Betis at home. They too will be looking for a reaction. How do you see this one, Tom? It could be a bit of a low-key belter.
100%. I mean... Rayo are one of the best teams to watch in La Liga. We've been beating that drum for a long time. Izzy Palazón, again, unbelievable against Real Betis. So unfortunate to have that goal disallowed. Because
what a goal that would have been.
Unbelievable. But yeah, they're playing some great football. And, you know, we were just saying before we came on air, they lost to Real Betis last weekend. And, you know, but they're still actually only 3 points off 7th place. Rayo, you know, you kind of think of them as a mid-table to lower mid-table side. But they're in that race. And... You know, if one of the top 7 wins the Copa del Rey, then an extra place becomes available for the Conference League. So, you know, 7th place could be enough for Rayo to sneak into Europe. And what a story that would be.
It certainly would.
And yeah, looking at Valladolid as well, at Soria, in front of, their own fans, they've been electric this season. Pacheta really knows how to whip that stadium up into a frenzy. And I was looking at the average shots taken and every game, you know, looking at the games at the Soria this season, there have been 25 shots on average per game at the Soria. And, you know, we know how Rayo play. We know Real Valladolid are desperate for a result. I really think this has all the hallmarks of, yeah, like you said, a bit of an understated belter.
Mm. There's so many intriguing games coming, and that is followed by Girona-Sevilla. Can Sevilla make it back-to-back wins for pretty much the first time all season, or will Girona get an important result at home? Yeah, I mean, Sevilla, they got the massive win against Getafe, and I suppose that was all that really mattered because they had to win that kind of, you know, CLC, as they say in Spain. But they weren't entirely convincing, were they? I'm still not quite sure if this Sevilla is really going to kick on or if they're still going to be in this battle for the rest of the season, basically. What do you think?
No, I completely agree. I was expecting Sevilla to win that game against Getafe. I thought it was, you know, a favourable opponent at home. They finally needed to break that duck at home, and they did. But I was very surprised at how laboured it was and how difficult it was for them to eventually get over the line. And, you know, against Celta as well in that first half, you know, the first game back from the World Cup, the first half they were dominated by Celta, and they probably should have gone more than one goal down. They managed to rescue it in the second half. They've not looked convincing at all. And this is a tough test because... Girona, you know, they were lucky at Espanyol last weekend, but they're a good team and they knock it about well in the middle of the park. Aleix Garcia, another player we've been talking about a lot this season, has been fantastic. Tati Castellanos has scored a few goals recently as well. This is a tough game for Sevilla and they need to start winning because, like you say, they're still in that fight. And if the likes of Celta get a result this weekend and other teams down there, Espanyol and Getafe are playing each other, one of those will get some points. They're straight back into the relegation zone again.
Mm. Yeah, by no means out of the woods yet, despite getting that massive win at home last week. Well, the precursor, the appetizer for the Basque derby is in Pamplona, almost Basque, in Navarre. It's Osasuna against Mallorca. Probably 2 of the overachievers so far this season, certainly in terms of the way that the sensations around the teams, I would say. I mean, Osasuna, very hard to beat, and Mallorca just going from strength to strength with their incredible talents up front. Morici, we've spoken about Kanjini many times, although he might be leaving, which would be a huge blow. Could either of these sides be in the conversation for Europe, do you think? I mean, this is going to be another decent game, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. First and foremost, I'd be very sad if Kangin Lee left. He's one of my favourite players. I absolutely love his link-up with Morici for Mallorca. Yeah, I think Osasuna, they have the grit. I think they have what it takes to grind out these results. And, you know, as we saw when they travelled to San Mamés last weekend against Athletic Club, they were battered for a lot of that game. They were definitely, you know, the second best team in that fixture, but they held on and they ground out that result at a very difficult place to go. And at home at El Sadar, this is the first time they're at home since after the World Cup. They've been largely very, very good. So win this game against Mallorca. And yeah, I think outside of the traditional sides, you know, outside of the likes of Real Sociedad, Real Betis, Villarreal, I'd say Osasuna are the best place side to, you know, mix up that European race.
Mm. Yeah, they've been kind of punched above their weight for a couple of seasons now, just progressing season on season under Diego Barasate. And I think it would be a real reward for them to finish in a European place. And of course, they're still in the cup, so that to look forward to as well. On to Sunday then, you've already touched on it, Getafe Espanyol, massive game at the bottom. I reckon the pressure will really be building on the coach that loses here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I see this one as a battle of the big strikers at the bottom, really. You know, Enes Unal and José Lu are both so, so important for their two respective teams in terms of the goals they score and how important they are in the way they play. And I think whoever, you know, which one of those players performs best in this game will probably be on the winning side. Getafe, again, you know, they're very difficult to beat at the Coliseum. But just not quite clicking at the moment. Borja Mayoral has clicked into gear a little bit recently, so maybe he gives him a bit of hope. But yeah, two managers under pressure. I'd say, you know, Diego Martinez at Espanyol is more of a project there. He's a younger manager. They brought him in with the aim for him to stay for a while and build something. So I'd say he'll have more time than Kike Sanchez Flores. But yeah, another really, really important game. And, you know, after we finish speaking about this one, there's one more very, very important game as well. You know, it's very congested at this bottom of the table. And this weekend, we'll have a big say in how it goes.
Well, you touched on it there, Tom. That huge game at the bottom is between 18th and 20th on Monday night. Cadiz against Elche. Cadiz still in the bottom three, but only 2 points from 13th as it stands right now. So a huge game. And Elche just celebrated their centenary a couple of days ago. They will really need to, you know, want to mark this with a win. They need wins and fast.
Yeah, I mean, they're on 4 points still. It's incredible. That's 16 games. They're still yet to win a game and they're currently 10 points adrift at the bottom. A great chance for Cadiz, I think, here, because after that unbelievable win last week at Mestalla, they look very organised. They look very well drilled. And I think to take on the side like Elche, who look as hopeless as they do at home, and like you said, if they win, they go above. Well, as it stands at the moment, they will jump up to 12th. So that's incredible. It shows how tight it is down there. And yeah, good opportunity for Sergio's men to get themselves out of this rut.
The final game of the weekend in La Liga terms is Almeria Atleti. Already spoken about Zhao, of course. But do you see Almeria getting back on the horse at home, or will Atleti, without Zhao, be able to continue their at least positive performances?
Yeah, I think this is quite an interesting one, actually, in that, you know, we were talking before how La Real went to Almeria and won comfortably. I think this is a good benchmark for Atletico Madrid. If Atletico Madrid go and, you know, perhaps don't win, lose the game, looking a bit in disarray, and Almeria beat them, then we can see the difference between a side like Atletico and a side like La Real, who look a lot more settled and perhaps the best placed team to, you know, take their, you know, traditional third placed spot. So I think that'd be a really important subplot. Almeria were disappointing against Real Sociedad last time out, but they had won four games in a row at the Power Horse Stadium before La Real came to town. So they're a very strong side. I like the new signing of Luis Suarez up front. I think he's a very busy striker who will add a lot of, you know, goals to this side and a lot of pressing as well. He's a very, very tireless runner. So yeah, I think this is dangerous for Atletico Madrid. I think it's a game, obviously, the type of game they should be winning, but let's not underestimate Almeria here because they're very strong in front of their own fans.
Indeed. That just about wraps it up for our podcast today. Thank you very much for your insights, Tom. We'll look forward to this weekend of action, as well as the Supercopa final, of course, on Sunday night. But for now, from all of us here, enjoy the weekend and adios.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.